Hello, once again, everybody. Thank you for joining me here on this Monday, October 21st edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. Let's go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me as we kick off a new week here on the program. One guest joins me. You know him. You love him. Professional handicapper Kyle Hunter from huntersportspicks.com for our week 9 college football first look. A lot of things to talk about here coming out of the weekend and, of course, heading on into this week on the gridiron. Over at bangthebook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Lots of great stuff going on over there right now. Got a World Series preview up for you with the Yankees and the Astros. My updated Week 9 college football power ratings posted as well. Situational betting tips for the NHL and the NBA as the NBA season gets underway on Tuesday. Got the situational article for you. And then Admir Aljic doing a lot of futures stuff with NBA championship odds, East and Western Conference odds. Then also some stuff on betting teasers and live betting in the NBA. Really good stuff for you to check out. Make sure you head on over there and take a look at it. And, of course, tomorrow we're 2 weeks away from the start of the college basketball season, so we'll try to start rolling out some college hoops content as well. As you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB, the number 200 is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. One guest on the program here today, that is professional handicapper Kyle Hunter from huntersportspicks.com. Kyle, how's it going today, man?
Going pretty good, man. Solid weekend for me. Up some in college football, split the NFL. Overall, pretty good weekend. I thought it was a pretty exciting weekend of games, especially in college football with the crazy upsets that there were. But can't believe we're already to week 9. Every time you say what week we're at, it's pretty hard to believe.
Yeah, it's crazy, right? I mean, it's just the year's flying by. And again, I mean, we've talked about this before. You know, college football is a year-round market now with the season win totals and the games of the year and all that type of stuff. But all that lead up for the season, all that research, all that prep work, then the thing just flies by. So we got a lot of stuff to get to here in week 9. But before we do that, as we've kind of been doing here the last few weeks, we'll take a look on the NFL side, and we'll take a look at Monday Night Football here in a couple of minutes. But, you know, I was out of town over the weekend. I didn't get a chance to watch a whole lot of football. I got the sweat pit in Syracuse at Chicago's Midway Airport Friday night. Other than that, didn't really get to watch a whole lot of stuff here. So what were some of your takeaways from week 7 in the NFL?
I thought there were a few pretty interesting games in the NFL. I thought the Colts with a really nice win there. Reich is a tremendous coach. I think some people are starting to get on to that, you know, he is getting a lot out of that Colts team, has a good defensive coordinator along with him. I like what the Colts are doing. You know, they lose Andrew Luck, Brissett, not a great quarterback, but a good quarterback. And I think that they have surprised quite a few people so far this year. I think that was a case of Reich being a better coach than O'Brien, which, you know, likely doesn't surprise too many people, but real nice win there for the Colts. I also thought a couple of the other more interesting games, Kirk Cousins torching the Lions D, maybe just a bad spot for the Lions there. You know, that was a short week for the Lions, and their defense had played pretty well, but, you know, they're coming off that disappointing loss where a lot of people thought that game was stolen away from them. So, you know, Cousins has played really well several weeks in a row. He's a pretty tough to figure out guy. I know he's not done very well against some of the best defenses, but, you know, he's a little bit better than some people will give him credit for. A couple of the other games that I thought were kind of interesting. The Chargers are just finding new ways to lose games. I mean, they really have a roster that shouldn't be that bad. You know, you look at the Chargers, there's some people who are pretty high on the Chargers coming into this season. I know that they've had quite a few injuries as they do every year, but, you know, I think the Chargers losing the way they have has been certainly pretty disappointing. And then the Ravens with a nice road win. I think Seattle had been really fortunate most of the year. The Ravens scored 30 points on only 14 first downs in that one. So to me, that said a little bit more about Seattle than it did Baltimore.
Yeah, I think I agree with all those things. And again, like I said, I mean, I didn't get to watch too much here, but this has been an MO for the Chargers for several years where they don't live up to their potential. And, you know, obviously it doesn't seem like things are going to change under Anthony Lynn. Got some subtweeting going on from Keenan Allen going into last week's game who knows what he's saying here about this, you know, about the most recent situation. So that, those are definitely some things that stand out. And I'll mention one other one. And I did get to watch the tail end of this game, one of the breweries we stopped at, the Cardinals and the Giants. You know, I mean, everything's set up really well for the Giants there. Extra rest, Cardinals team, long trip, early kickoff, Giants getting some of those skill guys back. And it didn't matter. You know, the Cardinals put a 14 spot up early in that game, did eventually kind of give up most of that lead. But, you know, to win a game on the road in the NFL where Kyler Murray throws for 104 yards, 89 adjusted passing yards with the two sacks, this Arizona team is growing up a little bit. And we had a lot of questions about Cliff Kingsbury for a variety of different reasons, but this Arizona team has played mostly competent football most of the season. They had one of the highest blitz rates in the NFL coming into this game, and they actually got to Daniel Jones this time as they sacked him 8 times. Really the difference in the game, you know, I like the Giants because I figured it was a good spot for them, took him in the Super Contest and the Circa. Again, not the most impressive box score for Arizona, but finding ways to win games is a real skill in the NFL. We already touched on a team that finds ways to lose games. If you can find ways to win games, especially when you're a team that's trying to grow up and form an identity, that's a really good win for Arizona.
A very good win. I think that that was a game where a lot of sharp people like the Giants, and that one almost took that one myself. I will say I'm still hesitant to back the Cardinals. I think that they have played better than I expected them to play. I still have some question marks about Kingsbury and that team in general, but they've certainly played better than I expected here the last few weeks. And I have to give them credit for that. Like you said, to be able to win a game that Murray didn't even throw for barely over 100 yards is pretty impressive.
Well, then one other little nugget here, and I saw this one getting some play on Twitter yesterday. Washington covering the number despite getting shut out against the 49ers. 49ers settling for 3 field goals under 30 yards in that game. They just couldn't get into the end zone. That should have been an easy cover for 49ers backers. But the fourth time since 1978 that a team in the NFL has covered the number without scoring a point. So tough beat for anybody there that had San Francisco. I know we had them in the nugget and then in our other Super Contest and Circa entries. So definitely a downer there coming out of the weekend. But we do have one more game here in the NFL. It is Monday Night Football. Patriots and the Jets. Jets, mostly a 9.5-point dog out there. There are some 10s at the more public shops like Bovada and MyBookie. Total 43.5 here. What are you thinking about Monday Night Football tonight?
Yeah, I've got a play on the total here in this one. So I won't say too much about the total, but I've got 67% of the tickets here on the Patriots, 63% of the money on the Patriots. So I would lean to the Jets in this game. I was pretty impressed with Sam Darnold in that first game back, you know, being out for as long as he was out with mono. I kind of figured he would come back and struggle for a week or two. And, you know, for him to play as well as he did against that Dallas defense impressed me quite a bit. You know, I think the Jets, we don't really know what they're going to be yet when they have Darnold and CJ Mosley. You know, they've been pretty injured so far this year. So while I don't think the Jets are really a good team, I'm not sure that they're really as bad as some people think. So, you know, the Patriots have been excellent on defense this year. Their offense really hasn't been that good. So I think the 10 points, if you're laying 9.5, you know, maybe that's fair. I think if you're laying 10, that's quite a few points to be laying here with a Patriots team that, you know, really hasn't played a great schedule. And they also haven't shown that much on offense yet. I don't think they were very impressive last week against the Giants where, you know, they scored a couple of special teams or defensive touchdowns in that one. Their offense, like I said, has not really gotten it going that well. So I think it's a fairly big number.
I like the Jets here in this one. They are the swing game here for me in the Circa and the Super Contest. I've got them. I'm 2-2 on the week. I've got them here plus the 9.5. And you know, this is a Patriots defense in line for some regression. I mean, you know, regression, of course, is a relative term. You know, they won't fall back to league average or be bad or anything like that. But they're allowing points on only 6.3% of opponents' possessions here. That's not going to continue. I mean, that's historic. It's completely unsustainable. I mean, again, say it a different way, they're stopping about 94% of opponents' possessions. That's just not going to continue here over the course of the season. They're only 10th in points per drive on offense, and they're only scoring on about 38% of their drives. They rank 15th in that department. So if this defense regresses, and I do think that that will be the case, getting margin is a little bit tougher when you have, by and large, a pretty average offense, at least in terms of converting your possessions into points. So I like the Jets tonight. I think with Darnold back, you know, they're in a lot better shape. As you mentioned, CJ Mosley may be coming back. And this Jets defense, without Mosley and with some of the tough situations the offense has put them in, this defense is about league average in DVOA. So Greg Williams is doing a really good job here. I think the Jets can keep this one close in what's probably an ugly game.
Yeah, I think so as well. I think that that was a good point that you made, that they've been put in a lot of bad situations defensively. So this is not a defense that's been able to sit on the sideline very much because of some of the quick three and outs and the turnovers. So the fact that they have been as good as they've been so far this year, the Jets defense has impressed me quite a bit, especially the fact that they've been without Mosley for so much time. I think, you know, Mosley is really an important player. You know, he's done a really good job with past teams, and the Ravens miss him. You know, you've got the Jets team now with Mosley. I think they'll be a lot better defensively than they've been so far this year. Hopefully he's able to play for this game, but I think the Jets are probably not really a good team, but I'm not sure they're really a bad team either. And I think that the market may be undervaluing them just a little bit here.
All right. So let's move over to the college football side of things here. And again, a lot of ground to cover, you know, in what's relatively a short amount of time with the way the time just flies here on this show when you and I get together. But let's talk about week 8. Again, like I said, I didn't see a whole lot. Of course, I was scoreboard watching with our picks in the Nugget and my personal plays, but that was about it for me. You know, I didn't get a chance to get eyes on too much, but you mentioned at the top of the show, it was a pretty wild weekend in college football.
You know, I think that Wisconsin losing was one of the biggest upsets I've ever seen in college football. You know, it's really surprised me a lot. This is a team that was giving up like 4-point-something points per game before this game. They go into Illinois. I know somebody's going to say, look, it was a look-ahead spot. They're watching for Ohio State the next week. I don't think that matters as to whether that was a shocking loss or not. You know, this is an Illinois team that's not been good at all. Pretty shocking loss there for Wisconsin. I know that there have been a little bit bigger point spread losses, but Wisconsin losing that game was really stunning to me. Then you have Vandy beat Missouri a week after being blown out at home by UNLV. Adam even texted me during that game after Wisconsin had lost and said, watch Vandy go and beat Missouri. And I think, what was that, like the second quarter or something? I mean, yeah. So you called that one. Missouri, a little less shocking, certainly, than Wisconsin. But Vandy being as bad as they were to lose to UNLV at home, as bad as they did, and then beat Missouri the next week. I mean, college football is pretty wild, and you can see the swings one way and the other. I thought it was also really interesting to see Kansas nearly knock off Texas. You know, gosh, I was really wanting Kansas to win that game, especially with the Texas season win total under ticket. But Les Miles doing a really good job there at Kansas, and I think that you can tell in this week's line that the odds makers are starting to respect Kansas.
Yeah, I think the game was like, I don't know if it was like 7-0 or 14-7 or something like that. I texted you at 4:57. I actually just looked it up. I said, watch Vandy beat Mizzou now, when you and I were talking about that that Wisconsin thing. And, you know, I mean, hey, it happens, you know. And a couple of points here. First of all, friend of the site, Lockie Lockerson on Twitter. He does a fantastic job here in the sports betting space. Mentioned yesterday on Twitter that two teams were playing a true road game Saturday after 5 consecutive home games, Wisconsin and Missouri. Both of them 3-plus touchdown favorites. Both of them lose outright. So, again, these schedule situations definitely can matter, especially if you've been at home for a long time. You go out on the road, different kind of environment. And the ironic thing here, too, is that Champaign is not much of a college football environment these days. And in Nashville at Vanderbilt, I mean, it's usually 50-50 or 60-40 for the other side. Maybe not here with Missouri in town, but you know, neither one of those home teams that pulled off the big upsets, you know, have a great home field presence. So I guess now you kind of wonder, with Wisconsin going to Ohio State this week, then of course, you know, Missouri with their future games here that are coming up on the road, you know, you sort of wonder here about that. They're at Kroger Field this week against Kentucky. Then they're at Georgia in a couple of weeks. So for Missouri here, you kind of got to wonder about them on the road. You know, in terms of other things that I kind of took a look at here, you know, there were some really interesting games in the late night slate. Eastern Michigan knocking off Western Michigan as a 9-point dog. They had a quarterback change, so I believe his name is Preston Hutchinson. Sounds like he should be in an Ivy League instead of an Eastern Michigan, but he was dominant in the passing game, looked really good for them. And you may see this here from time to time, and I don't know how much to penalize a team like Western Michigan, but you may get some of these games where all of a sudden they make a quarterback change or a quarterback's hurt, and the opposition doesn't have a chance to plan for that new player. And all of a sudden the dude comes out there and looks phenomenal. And you sit there and ask yourselves, why wasn't the coaching staff starting this guy to begin with? So look, box score study is important to pick up on some of those things too.
Yeah. You know, I was surprised with that when I had Eastern Michigan over the total. And fortunately, because of their last touchdown, did get the win in that over. Glass has been really good for Eastern Michigan. I feel like he had done a really good job for them. I think that, you know, there's going to be a quarterback battle there. I'm not exactly sure why he didn't play. And I think that, you know, it was not really publicly said, but we'll see what happens based on the way Hutchinson played. Like you said, he was really, really good in that game. So it would be hard to sit him out right after that game. So I don't know what will happen there, but that'll be something to monitor. I also thought that Michigan looked pretty good in the second half against Penn State. You know, they dug a big hole there in the first half. They come all the way back, drop the pass in the end zone to lose by a touchdown. I mean, they could have easily tied that game up. Certainly looked a lot better in the second half than what I have seen them here recently. So, you know, we'll see if their offense keeps improving the way that they have. Shea Patterson looked quite a bit better in the second half of that game. Was getting a little bit more time to throw than he was there in the first half. And maybe that Gaddis offense will start working better than it has so far. But I bumped Michigan up a couple points in my PRs.
Yeah, you know, I was kind of following along with that game on Twitter a little bit. And a lot of people saying that, you know, very early in the game. And I mean, Penn State did get off to a 21-0 start there. You know, kind of not complaining, but I guess just sort of pointing out how conservative Harbaugh was very early in that game. You know, could have made some fourth down decisions that he didn't, stuff like that. This stuff is important, man. You know, I mean, when you talk about the dispersal of talent, like we've discussed here before, these coaches need to start making the correct calls on fourth down. They got to stop doing dumb shit like getting, you know, 17 yards of field position by punting on fourth and three. And, you know, the punter buries it 6 yards deep in the end zone. This is just, it's running roughshod over college football where some coaches make the right decisions. They go for it. They're aggressive. They do the right things. They trust in their players. And other coaches just, you know, they're stuck in 1992 and they're playing way too conservative. Everybody, all these coaches with their coach speak and, oh, we got to establish the run. Bullshit. Establish whatever moves the football. So, you know what, Michigan, yeah, they had chances. And maybe if they're a little bit more aggressive in the first half, maybe that game does go a different way.
Yeah, I think that that's been a case that there's been a lot of coaches like that, both in college football and the NFL. You know, there's some coaches that stand out in my mind in both college football and the NFL that you pretty much know if they, even if they're at the 35-yard line, it's fourth and two or fourth and three, they're either going to punt or, you know, do something really weird instead of go for it. And, you know, that hurts their team. Like you said, over the long run, you got to give them a chance. I thought that the end of that Boise and BYU game the other night was really an interesting game with some really questionable refereeing job there for a little bit. And then finally, BYU has the ball fourth and a little bit less than half a yard with a couple minutes left. Boise State without all their timeouts. I thought it was really good there by BYU to go for it. You know, if you go for it and get it, the game's over. Both of the commentators were basically shouting, you can't go for it here. If you don't get it, you lose the game. But they're only ahead by 3 points. You know, if they punt it back, Boise has 2 minutes to go. Boise had been moving the football very well the last couple drives. I think BYU had a good chance of losing that game if they punted it away. So I like the aggressive play calling like that.
Three more results I want to touch on here real quickly. Miami, what are you doing at home losing to Georgia Tech? I don't care if the game went to overtime or not. That's bad. And Miami's offense has not been good all year long. Manny Diaz, I don't think he was the right hire. And you know, we'll see if they kind of pivot here as they go forward. Memphis blowing out Tulane. What a big time, big boy win for the Tigers there in that one against the Tulane team that a lot of people have really, really liked here over the last couple of years. And I can't blame them for that. Memphis is a team that I know I'm always high on coming into the year. They've been very, very good so far this season. And then one more, what Baylor did in the second half to Oklahoma State. I upgraded Baylor 6 points in my power ratings here this week. Again, I was probably just a little bit too low on them, probably catching up a little bit. But damn, Matt Rhule might be a top five coach in college football.
Yeah, I mean, Baylor beat me this past week when I had Oklahoma State. That was a good spot for Oklahoma State. I mean, everything set up for them to win that game. They what have a 10-point lead, minus three. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, what did it close? Like five and a half or six? Something like that.
Line value has not been good this year.
Right, right. And Matt Rhule has been really good as an underdog. And that's something that maybe, you know, I could kick myself a little bit after the game. I think as a short underdog, he may be 11-1 or 12-1 ATS here. It's been a really great run for him as an underdog. Really, I think more than anything, what you said right there is true, is that Matt Rhule is just a really good coach. Mike Gundy's a good coach, too. So, you know, a really good job there by Baylor, losing their best linebacker. Their first game without him against the Oklahoma State offense, it's very good. I moved Baylor up 4 points in my PRs as well. So I think this is a Baylor team that's just better than most people think. I agree with that Memphis game being really interesting. It looked to me like from watching that game as much as I did that Tulane really never got off the bus in that one. So I don't know why Tulane wasn't ready for that game, but Memphis is certainly a team that I'm high on as well.
All right, so let's take an overview look here real quickly, because we do have some really marquee matchups this week, and we're going to talk about a couple of them here later on in the show. But very interesting to see the splits of road teams and favorites. We know that road dogs and, you know, underdogs in general have done pretty well here in the NFL this season. Not a whole lot of home field advantage. What are you seeing here in college football so far?
Well, the road teams are 247, 246, and 10 ATS. So basically exactly split down the middle. You got favorites at 252, 241, and 10 ATS. Unders 260, 231, 52.95% for unders there, which is kind of interesting when you go into, you know, the time of the year where weather is going to be the biggest issue. Weather was an issue for several games past weekend where, you know, I think they were stone cold unders because of the weather. Keep an eye out for that as we go forward. There's going to be quite a few more games like that. But, you know, on the favorite and road side, basically pretty even but across the board. And as we've said before, you know, the odds makers are good at this. So it's going to be hard to find an edge just by looking at that alone.
Well, pretty tough morning for me here. Like I said, you know, being out of town, had to do my power ratings here this morning. But again, you can't cut corners. You can't just leave things out of your process. And part of my process is to go through and look at all the box scores and try to find, you know, try to see what the story was told for these games here so that you know if there were turnover margin things or something like that. And I know you've got a couple here that you want to mention on today's show.
Yeah, Wyoming 23, New Mexico 10. I had New Mexico in this game. Unfortunately, I did cover ATS. New Mexico, 372 yards to 345 for Wyoming. They lost a fumble, were stopped on downs once. Look, every single game Wyoming has had has been misleading. I mean, this is a team that's just, you know, it's just the misleading team of the year. They've been very, very fortunate. I think most people are still too high on Wyoming. This is a team that struggled to beat Idaho at home. I know they play a lot of close games in general, and I think that, you know, other than their win against UNLV, basically every game they've had has been very close. And, you know, you could say what you want about UNLV. They've had a couple performances where they look like they're trying and others where they just really look bad. But Wyoming to me is a team that has just been so misleading. And if you look at their profile, they're still a team I'd rather go against.
Yeah, I agree. I, you know, you and I were kind of talking about that game a little bit off air last week, and it was really hard to try and lay 19.5 points with Wyoming. Yeah, it's hard to take New Mexico at any price these days, but that was definitely one that stood out. I'll throw one at you here before you throw out your last one. This Houston and UConn game, you know, I think there were some motivation questions for UConn coming into this game, or for Houston, excuse me, coming into this game, going on the road, playing in cold weather, long trip, so on and so forth. They won the game 24-17. They were about a 3-touchdown favorite in it. They got outgained 438 to 284. I mean, I think Houston's just a straight fade team the rest of the way.
Yeah, I mean, with what's going on with Holgorsen and everything that's going on there at Houston, there's no way I can bet Houston right now. And yeah, that one's really interesting, especially when you consider how bad UConn has been. I think that UConn is a team that might be improving slightly, but I think that says a lot more about Houston than it does UConn personally. The last one I was going to say was Virginia and Duke. Virginia 48, Duke 14. Virginia only had 307 yards of offense and scored 48 points. It was 307 to 250. This game was misleading in two ways. Virginia shouldn't have won by that much, and it was way, way higher scoring than it should have been. 3.52 yards per play and 4.45 yards per play. So if you had under, 45 and a half, something like that, that really was a pretty good pick. And everybody on the outside could say, oh, they scored 62 points. How can you say that was a good pick? You know, if you play that in that situation, they get that many yards per play. In an average spot, you probably get a total points of, you know, upper 30s or something like that. But because of all the turnovers here, kickoff run back for Virginia as well. Duke had five turnovers. This was a pretty misleading game.
Well, and then one other thing to take a look at here as far as some of the scores go. You and I talked about this. I know you mentioned this last week on Twitter. I don't think we talked about it too much on Monday, just simply because the forecasts don't have a high degree of confidence. But there were also a lot of games here this weekend where weather was a factor. So you may see some really ugly stat lines out there, but again, keep in mind that it may not just have been bad or inefficient offense. It may have been weather related as well.
Yeah, definitely. Keep things in perspective when you watch a game, when you look at that box score. If you see it was, you know, weather like you have in the Florida State Wake Forest game, for example, or the Georgia and Kentucky game, Washington State game was the same way, Utah and Arizona State. There were a lot of these games where if the offense has had some pretty ugly numbers, it says less about the offense and it's more about the weather.
Well, once again, you know, I talk about my process in my Power Rankings article every week. And one of the steps with that is trying to find injury information. And sometimes it's not real easy to do in college football, but there are a couple that you want to mention here.
Yeah, I mean, the one that really stands out to me is Matt Myers missed last week's game against Akron for Buffalo. Kyle Van Trees, who was the punter for Buffalo, was the quarterback in that game. He was 14 for 23 for 65 yards. 65 yards on 23 pass attempts against Akron. I mean, you know, that's really hard to believe. So I'm not saying Matt Myers is a great player, but I think they need Matt Myers. Listed as questionable for this week's game, and that's definitely an injury I would want to monitor.
Yeah, that's one. And speaking of the MAC here, too, you know, a lot of people kind of looking at this Toledo game against Ball State and saying, you know, what's happened to Toledo here? Well, they were down to their fourth string quarterback at one point here in this game. Once they took Carter Bradley out, who was also hurt after going 14 of 34 for .137 and a pick. So Toledo, their quarterback situation is an absolute disaster area. The MAC's been hard to figure out all year anyway, but Buffalo and Toledo, two teams with substantial injuries.
Yeah, definitely the MAC, just totally wild and a bad conference this year. But I agree that Toledo situation is one that you'll want to look at really closely too. One more quarterback situation here with Costello and Mills questionable for Stanford. You know, Stanford is totally unbettable without those two guys. The third stringer looked really, really bad last week. I there's no way I could bet Stanford if he is the one playing. So, you know, for me, I think Stanford's either a go against without those two guys or a stay away.
Well, we like to run through some stats here, and we'll get to some regression notes and stats here in a minute, but some interesting stats that you were kind of looking at here, and we'll actually start in the MAC with, you know, a Central Michigan team. I said I really liked Central Michigan and Bowling Green over last week. You know, I'm glad that that was one that it barely got there. It shouldn't have been as much of a struggle as it was, but it did end up getting there in the 38-20 game. But that Central Michigan offense, and just in general, this Central Michigan team with a very experienced head coach in Jim McElwain, looking pretty good here.
I've been really impressed with what McElwain's done so far this year. This is a Central Michigan team, 55th in yards per play margin so far this year. They have 29 points per game. I don't have it in front of me right now exactly what they were last year. I think they were 129th or 130th in yards per play last year. They were so bad on offense. They couldn't do anything. To get to 29 points per game this quickly, really, really shocking. You know, this is an amazing turnaround job. It's obviously helped by the fact that the MAC is weak. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, I didn't think that McElwain would be able to turn this team around this quickly, but really impressive job by him. both defensively and offensively. But, you know, to me, what really stands out is their offense based on how weak they were a year ago.
3.8 yards per play last year, 15 points per game. So incredible turnout. And again, I mean, and they've gone through two quarterbacks too. They had the Moore kid who popped a positive PED test. He's suspended for the year. They had Dormady, the transfer from Tennessee, who started, then got hurt. They went to Moore. He was throwing for like 300-something yards a game, pops a PED test. They go back to Dormady, and they still look pretty good on offense. So really impressive job there up in Mount Pleasant, to be sure. Not impressive offensive job at Northwestern.
I have to say, you know, this one really stands out to me as pretty crazy. Northwestern is averaging 4.1 yards per pass attempt. That is easily the worst in the country, I think, by almost a full yard. Quarterback rating for Northwestern's quarterbacks, 73.83, according to CFBstats.com. That's the worst in the country, and the second worst in the country is Old Dominion at 98.45. You know, for there to be 130 teams in the country and you'd be that much worse than the rest of them really, really stands out. You know, the thing that's really interesting to me about this, too, is that part of the reason some people were high on Northwestern before the year is because they had Hunter Johnson transfer over from Clemson, who had previously been a very, very highly recruited guy. So they thought maybe Northwestern's offense was going to be better. Turns out they're just that much worse. And still, you know, they've played six games and they only have 9 plays of 20 yards or more, which is really hard to believe.
Yeah, they're not good. And again, to put this into perspective, Old Dominion's quarterbacks, they've used 3 of them here so far. 2-7 touchdown interception ratio, 54.4% completion rate, 32 sacks taken by Old Dominion already. And they're second worst by a pretty large margin above Northwestern. So, hey, man, I mean, Pat Fitzgerald, you know, again, keep this in mind, too, that, you know, when people talk about, oh, Pat Fitzgerald is a dog, you know, they're talking about like the last 20 games. That has no bearing on Northwestern this season, especially with that quarterback situation. So that's why I'm definitely iffy about trends, because sample sizes can make them pretty misleading.
Yeah, I think Pat Fitzgerald's still a good coach and not a guy that I'd be anxious to go against. But like you, you know, when you look at these games, you say, maybe I want to back Northwestern as a dog. And then you start thinking, how many points do they have to score? You know, I mean, I don't know if they can get to that, you know, and that's something that I think is a very valid question as you go forward. I'll give a couple others here pretty quick. UCF has gotten 28 first down by penalties so far this year. Those AAC refs, this is something that you and I talked about off the air. Hard to believe you could have 28 first downs by penalty so far in the year. USC, on contrast, USC has 6 first downs by penalty all season so far. You know, staying in the AAC, SMU has 29 sacks so far this year. Is plus 21 in sack margin. Really impressive there. And the final one I have for the interesting stats here, kickoff returns. Virginia averaging 35.67 yards per return. That's 18 returns. Really, really impressive. And TCU averaging only 13.88 yards per return on 16 returns.
Yeah, the AAC thing is interesting. I don't know if there's any, you know, data. We'll have to look this up for another show, but when you look at the most penalized teams here in college football this year, Tulsa is number 1 with 89 yards per game, then Oklahoma, Cincinnati 82.7, Pitt 82.6. They get whistled for a lot of things. Tulane 76.3. So, 3 of the bottom 6 teams in the country here coming from the AAC. Last year you had Cincinnati down there once again, and then 3 years ago South Florida, Memphis, Cincinnati. Cincinnati just gets penalized a lot, apparently. Temple. But regularly here, it's a regular occurrence to see 3 AAC teams among the most, you know, 7 or 8 penalized teams in the country. So maybe the AAC is a whistle-happy conference.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the case. Now, the question is, how do you bet based on that? I would assume there's been quite a few defensive penalties, if there's been that many. Probably some pass interference penalties that have been pretty key, but at the same time, I imagine there's a lot of holding penalties and things like that. So you wonder if it helps points. I think it's a pretty high scoring conference. So I don't know, maybe they want it to be quite a few points. It's hard to say exactly what that means, but it's very interesting to see that many teams from the same conference there right at the top.
All right, we got a lot of regression stats to throw off for you here, but we'll start first with fumble luck, because that is something that tends to regress to the mean over the course of the season. And again, as we know, turnovers, very, very important. Who are some of the teams that could see some fumble luck regression, whether it's positive or negative?
So Tulsa has recovered 8 of 8 fumbles from their opponents. So every time their opponents put it on the field, they've picked it up. So that has to regress over time. Air Force has recovered only 5 of 16 fumbles from opponents so far this year. Wake Forest, on the other end, Wake Forest has lost only 2 out of 11 fumbles this year. They've been very fortunate there. Utah has lost 6 out of 7 fumbles so far this year. So you would expect some positive regression there from Air Force and Utah, and some negative regression from Tulsa and Wake Forest.
No, I think it's very important for our listeners to, if they can, obviously a lot of people probably just listen to us in the car, but to try and write down some of these regression stats that we talk about here, kind of follow some of these things. They are going to have an impact from a betting standpoint at some point. You know, it may not be in the next game. It may be 2 games down the line, but these are things that you at least want to have in the back of your mind, factor into your handicap. This one factored in, at least from a first half standpoint. You know, LSU just so good that, you know, they just wind up covering numbers for the most part anyway. But this was one that we talked about last week, and it almost did have a pretty substantial impact.
Yeah, I wanted to follow up on the LSU one from before last week. They had 29 touchdowns and 34 trips into the red zone. They actually failed to score a touchdown on 3 straight trips into the red zone early last week against Mississippi State. Regression finally started to hit there. It did cause the under to come in last week's game. Mississippi State just so bad that, you know, they can't cover a number. I think that team is really, really disappointed. LSU, they can't keep scoring at that kind of rate in the red zone, but I just wanted to kind of bring that one up as an example of anybody that has that kind of red zone number this far into the season is going to regress eventually. As far as the next one here for this year, for this week, I should say, Colorado State 22nd in yards per play so far this year. They've been really good on offense. They're 62nd in points per game. They've fumbled 17 times this year. I don't think anybody's fumbled that many times. They've lost 12 of those fumbles too. So they've lost 12 fumbles where a lot of teams in the country haven't even fumbled the ball that many times. I would think that Colorado State would be more efficient on offense going forward. And, you know, getting 22nd yards per play, you would think that this team would score quite a few points.
I want to circle back to the LSU one real quick because Auburn has only allowed 8 touchdowns in 20 red zone attempts. So nice. Here we go. This could be one of those spots here. Again, not to say that I'm endorsing Auburn plus the points or anything like that, but simply to say that you've got an Auburn defense that's been very good in the red zone against an LSU offense that's been almost unstoppable in the red zone. Maybe the deciding factor here, not just in the game, but also, you know, from an ATS standpoint.
Yeah, I think that is a good point. You know, Auburn has a very good defense. Maybe you'll want to look for an under if you want some regression there, if you expect some regression. At the same time, LSU unders are hard to take right now. So we'll see what kind of number they have on that one. Miami, you mentioned them earlier. They got all kinds of issues, but I have to say Miami's red zone offense has been absolutely hapless. 34 trips into the red zone, only 23 scores. It's not 23 touchdowns, it's 23 scores. So 11 times they turned it over in the red zone. Miami also under 30% on third down conversions. You would think that would improve. You know, it's hard to be that bad. Diaz, like you said, a really bad start to his tenure there at Miami.
Yeah, it's not a good start at all. And also, too, here, you know, I mean, what does this say about Dan Enos? You know, being the offensive coordinator there, and, you know, he's kind of bounced around a little bit, left Central Michigan, wound up being a position coach and an assistant and an analyst and all that. Not a good look here for him as an OC with this offense. And maybe it gets better, but so far, not so good.
Yeah, I agree. That's not a very good look for him. Utah State is one that really stands out to me. Utah State, 24 trips in the red zone, 8 touchdowns. The Aggies have had a ton of really big plays so far this year, and they play really, really fast. I'm going to lean toward overs with Utah State the rest of the season. They should improve their efficiency in the red zone. Jordan Love, very, very good there for Utah State. And, you know, that touchdown percentage in the red zone has to improve over time. When you're playing as fast as they are, they're actually first in the nation in tempo. You'd expect a lot of points in their games going forward.
I thought it was interesting. I actually just went to look just out of curiosity to see how Texas Tech is doing in the red zone since, you know, Matt Wells went to Lubbock and most of the coaching staff went with him. They are actually 72nd in touchdown percentage. So I was kind of wondering if maybe it was just, you know, the way that play design was scripted and stuff like that, but it just seems like it's, you know, just maybe a coincidence or something else.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it is just coincidence, and I think over time this thing will even out. But I'm surprised, and we've mentioned this before, I'm surprised that Utah State's playing as fast as they are this year. I like that they're playing that fast with a really good quarterback like that, but they'll have some pretty high numbers because everybody knows they're playing fast, but I think they'll have some pretty high totals here the rest of the way, so I would look toward overs. Iowa State, the next one I wanted to mention. Iowa State is 99th in third down conversions allowed. The Cyclones are letting opponents convert on more than 42% of third downs. They're 15th in yards per play allowed, so this number is definitely going to regress. It makes no sense to be that good of a defense and be 99th in third down conversions allowed. They're 15th in yards per play allowed and 34th in points per game allowed, largely thanks to that third down percentage defense. I think there's improvement coming for this Iowa State defense, and Iowa State in general, a team that I'm pretty high on.
Yeah, the market moving another line on Iowa State here this week, too. So they've been bet up four straight weeks, I think. So sharp bettors have definitely taken notice of this team.
Yeah, and I think that that's partially people being pretty high on Matt Campbell. We've talked about that for a little while now. But Iowa State, a team that's improving on offense with Brock Purdy, and their defense is very strong, especially compared to the other defenses in the Big 12. Staying in the Big 12, Kansas State, this one is really about the biggest regression stat I've seen. 90th in yards per play allowed so far this year. So their defense really has not been very good. They're 19th in points per game allowed. They're giving up only 23.88% on third down. I'm here to tell you that this is definitely going to regress. Kansas State is going to start giving up more points than they have so far this year. Whether it means you should bet against Kansas State, whether it means you should take some overs, regardless of how you want to look at it, Kansas State's defense is not as good as they look.
I'm trying to figure this out. I mean, they only have 13 red zone attempts from the opposition here on the year. That's tied for fourth lowest in college football. They've given up points on all 13 of them, by the way. But how does that happen? You give up a bunch of yards per play, but I guess they're giving up long touchdowns that don't result in red zone trips. I don't know.
Yeah, they have to be giving up some big long plays for touchdowns. I will say, though, that Kansas State has played a pretty weak schedule so far this year as well. So they've played some offenses who can't do much of anything, and yet, you know, their defense really isn't that good.
That was a little bit of a misleading box score last week, too. They got outgained by 100 yards by TCU, won the game 24-17, only had 266 yards of offense themselves. So that was one of the misleading games there. We had a listener ask about this last year, and we want to revisit this here again, of course, this week. Only two weeknight games, but, you know, we should have some more here coming, I guess I would say.
Yeah, I'm surprised there's only two weeknight games this week. I'm not really sure why that is. But, yeah, I remember, I believe it was Zach reached out to me about the weekday games last year. And I looked this one up, you know, out of curiosity to see how it's been doing so far this year. The weekday unders have done really well again. August through October, weekday unders. November ones have been about even in the past, but August through October, weekday unders have done very well. 421 and 333, that's 55.8% under since 2005. This year it's 37 and 21 to the under. I think that this is a big enough sample size that you can say that this definitely does matter. You know, you're looking at way more than 700 games here, and the under is almost 56%. I mean, we know that if you're hitting 55.8% over that large of a sample size, you're really good at this. So what's going on here is I would imagine that, you know, the short turnaround times are helpful for the under. That is the case in college basketball. Some of the time, these teams have the week off prior, and then they've still had unders here. So I think it's certainly interesting to see that, you know, we see so many unders. I think part of the reason also could be these are some TV games for teams that aren't used to being on national TV games. So usually in both college basketball and college football, I think of that as a positive for low scoring based on nerves and based on, you know, teams being up for it. They're not going to just go through the motions when they're actually on national television.
Yeah, some excellent points there. And I think part of it, too, is that, you know, when you look at, you mentioned that November, it's about a 50-50 type proposition. It's pretty close to even. You know, when you think about November, it's a lot of MAC games. You know, they play a lot of those Tuesday, Wednesday games where the conference is, it's all over the map again this year, but you know, it used to be such a powerhouse offensive conference with, you know, the game that coined the term Maction. You know, so you probably saw a lot of higher scoring games there with the MAC, but maybe this year November unders do well because the MAC is just, it's not a very good conference in general. There's not a whole lot of efficiency really on either side of the ball, but I kind of wonder if maybe November continues the year-long trend this year because the MAC is just so far down.
Yeah, I think that's a good point that the MAC has been a lot of the games from that in November. Also, you could argue that maybe in November, some of the teams are giving up on the season, and that's why there's a little bit less unders. But going forward, I would look to bet weekday unders a lot quicker than I would weekday overs, that's for sure.
All right, so we'll get into some game breakdowns here. And look, I'm going to go ahead and do this first because I've already had a listener question about it. And I hate to do this to my guests, but I'm going to do it with every one of them. We have to talk UConn and UMass and the glorious shit show that that game is going to be. UMass off of a bye. They're a 9-point underdog to UConn in Saturday's first game on the board.
Okay, so yeah, I was kind of wondering what you're about to throw at me when you said that. So I'm sitting here thinking, what's he going to ask about, Wisconsin and Ohio State? No, not Wisconsin and Ohio State. It's UConn and UMass. Bit of a different game there, but I will say that I cannot bet.
It was coming, though.
It had to come. I can't bet UMass here. I can't bet. You know, I would have to lay the points with UConn if I were taking this game or take the over. UMass's defense has been so bad. Listen, we know how UConn's defense is too. So you would expect a lot of points here in this game. The total would be fairly high in this one. This is a game where, you know, if you're handicapping this game in a normal fashion as to like you would in a normal game, it's not really a normal game. This is UConn versus UMass. This is a UMass team that's playing very fast, that is so bad on defense that even a team like UConn is going to be able to get a lot of big plays on them. So can UMass keep up? I'm not convinced that they will. I would lay the points here if I were betting this game or take the over.
I mean, my line on this game is 6.5, but maybe I just haven't upgraded UConn enough because they have actually looked a little bit better here of late, as you mentioned. At least they have a win. You know, I mean, they can go out there and say, hey, you know, we're probably not going to win another game, but hey, we're not going to go 0-for if we don't win this game. UMass, I mean, this is it. They're not going to come close to a chance at another win. So I think UConn kind of just goes down there and can free roll it a little bit, whereas UMass, yeah, they're off of a bye, but I don't think Walt Bell's that good of a coach anyway. This is their last chance at a win. So there's more pressure, as crazy as it is to say, on UMass here. I think this is one of those games that's really tailored towards live betting in the sense that if UConn gets out early and they get a little bit of margin in the first quarter or in the first half, I think UMass completely folds here. So I think UConn live to win by a big number isn't a bad idea.
Well, what if UMass gets ahead early? Would you want to bet UConn, you know, minus the short number, or do you think not at that point?
If UMass gets ahead early, say your goodbyes to your friends and family because the world's going to end.
Yeah, if UMass gets ahead by a lot, then we know that something's really wrong in the college football world. Yeah, this is I'm curious to see what everybody else has to say about this game. I will say from the beginning that it's very highly unlikely that I will bet this game.
It's highly unlikely that I'll even watch any of this game, as awful as it's going to be. All right, anyway. So we go to Thursday night here. SMU and Houston, and if Houston was the Houston team that, you know, we kind of thought they would be coming into the season if they had De'Ara King, this would be a massive Thursday night game. Instead, SMU's an 11 or a 13.5 point favorite with some pretty short travel from the Dallas area to Houston.
Yeah, I mean, this is a line that I think will keep going up. I think if you like Houston, you want to wait. If you like SMU, you want to lay it now. We've gone from 12.5 to 13.5, 81% of the bets on SMU. And 87% of the money. It's hard to imagine anybody too excited to bet on Houston here. You know, as you look at this game, the thing that really stands out to me about SMU is their defense. You know, Sonny Dykes done a really good job here. Kevin Kane deserves a lot of credit for his work with this defense. SMU is 37th in yards per play allowed so far this year. This is an offense, SMU, that, you know, I thought they were mainly going to be about the offense. They're 48th in yards per play on offense. you know, who would have guessed that the defense has been the strength of the team so far this year? They are going to play some teams that I imagine they'll give up some points and quite a few yards. But SMU's defense is a lot better than I would have expected them to be. Last year, they had improved some. This year, they're a lot better. SMU has some really good receivers. I think they'll take advantage of a weak Houston secondary. Look, I'm not impressed with Dana Holgorsen or everything that's going on. You know, his attitude, the hot mic catching him there the other day with a fairly negative thing to say about his team, certainly. There's only one way I could bet this game and be SMU or pass.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I'm right on the number pretty much at 13, but it would be SMU or nothing for me for all the reasons that you outlined there. And also, you've got a Houston team where you seriously question their motivation level. I mean, they just got badly outgained by UConn on the road. Do they really care about a Thursday night game here? I mean, are they really going to be focused for that short turnaround? I don't think so. And for SMU, if you're Sonny Dykes, you know, you talked about this with the weekday unders and teams getting a chance to play in the spotlight. People are taking notice of SMU, but Sonny Dykes can say, look, boys, we're on ESPN this week. Like, this is our chance to go and ball out and show the country what we are. Maybe get a shot at that group of five, you know, New Year's Six bowl berth. This is a big spot for SMU here, I think. And I don't think Houston's going to show up at all.
Agree. You wonder about Houston's motivation for any of the games the rest of this season. I would be really surprised if I have a Houston ticket in any game the rest of the season. I think I've seen too much from them, and I know too much about this Houston program at this point that I'm either going to be against them or going to be passing on the side. And here, like you said, I would think that SMU would be really excited for this game. I don't see why there would be any reason for them not to be. So I kind of like SMU minus 13.5, even though, like you said, my number here is SMU minus 13.5. So not a PR play, more of just a motivational, situational edge.
Well, and again, you mentioned how good SMU's defense has been. I mean, Houston just had 24 points and under 300 yards at UConn. SMU scored 37 points in every game this year. So if you want to take Houston, you've got to sit there and think to yourself, how many points do I need from Houston here for them to cover the number? If they're not going to get into the upper 20s, I don't think they have any chance at covering this number, and I don't think that's going to be the case. So I do like SMU here. I'm surprised it opened under 14. It's certainly going to get to 14 sooner rather than later. Another game here this week, Friday night, another big favorite, USC on the road in Boulder to take on Colorado. USC a 13-point favorite now. 11.5 was the bet online opener.
Well, the first thing that stands out to me about this game, if you remember back, what was it, you know, maybe 4 or 5 weeks ago, people were saying, wow, Colorado's pretty decent. You know, they've picked up a couple of nice wins here. Colorado is not good. They're really a bad team. This Colorado defense, 128th in yards per play allowed so far this year. And, you know, that's ahead of the vaunted Bowling Green defense and the UMass defense. So, I mean, Colorado has not been good at all on defense so far this year. Montez has thrown a lot of picks. You know, so certainly the defense has been put in bad spots, but they were 128th in yards per play allowed. So they've been really, really bad. USC coming out off a blowout against a lifeless Arizona team. You know, what's the deal with Kevin Sumlin and that Arizona team? That's a question for another day, I guess. But, you know, they've really been disappointing. Colorado, just a very bad team. You know, I knew that their defense was going to be bad. I didn't know that they'd be this bad. Montez, like I said, throwing a lot of picks. Colorado has good receivers, and you would think that they'd be able to be better than this offensively. If you look at yards per play margin, Colorado is 116th out of 130 teams in the country. USC is 39th. You know, the thing about this game, and I think you probably know what I'm going to say right now, is that I really don't like trusting Clay Helton coach teams laying 13 points on the road. So I won't bet USC in this one. I will consider an over. You know, this is one where if you get an over that's a low enough number, you know, I wouldn't mind taking an over in a game like this. USC plays pretty fast. Colorado, pretty average in their pace of play. But to me, you know, you get a number in the upper 50s, maybe 57, 58, 59, something like that. I would look toward the over here in this game.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is a USC or nothing spot. I do like the over a little bit more as well. I mean, look at this USC team. I know that people were kind of down on them with the 3-3 start, but, you know, Fresno State has some athletes. They're very well coached with Jeff Tedford, and they'd certainly be well prepared for a week one game. Yeah, Stanford's not great, but, you know, Stanford's still a you know, solid program, first conference game. At BYU, Utah, at Washington, at Notre Dame, they played three straight top 20 teams. They've already played four top 25 teams. Obviously, Stanford's not top 25 caliber, but they were ranked when they played them. USC's played a very, very difficult schedule here with a bad head coach and a first-year offensive coordinator. I think they've done pretty well to go 4-3. I agree with you. I think it's USC or nothing here, and also looking at the over.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's hard for me to trust Clay Helton, but I think having Graham Harrell there as the offensive coordinator has really helped his team a lot.
One more game to hit on here, and you know, obviously you had to kind of carry the show from a notes standpoint here today, but I know this is one that you have an opinion on. Oh, this line has kind of run away a little bit.
Yeah.
We go all the way down to the bottom of the board, 211, 212. San Diego State, a dozen-point favorite over UNLV.
Yeah, I like this one a little bit more before it was 12 or 12 and a half points. But I wanted to point this game out because San Diego State has been a little bit misleading here so far this year. Juwan Washington wasn't healthy. A very good running back for them when he's healthy. Chase Jasmine, a good backup as well. UNLV can't stop the run. They're 126th stopping the run in yards per carry allowed. So you've got San Diego State, a team that really needs to be able to run the ball because Agnew is not a good quarterback. They're going to run it as much as they can. Agnew is a decent scrambler, but not a good passer. UNLV, unlikely to get much going here on offense. San Diego State is 12th in yards per play allowed. You know, as I handicap this game, I think about, you know, how many points is UNLV going to score here? I don't think it'll be very many. And then San Diego State, if they have any kind of success running the football here, you would think they'd be able to score enough to cover the spread. I will say if this one keeps going up to, you know, 14 or something like that, it gets hard to lay too many points with San Diego State because most of their games are really low scoring. But I do lean San Diego State in this one based on the run offense up against a UNLV run defense that is just one of the weakest in the country.
Well, I know we didn't get to the marquee games here, but I'm glad we got a couple of stronger opinions from you because usually we talk the weeknight games and, you know, sometimes neither one of us has too strong of a take on them. So glad we got some extra thoughts here with that Friday night game and then also this late one here on Saturday with Kyle Hunter of huntersportspicks.com. Kyle, what's going on over at the website right now, buddy?
Well, I've been doing some NBA prep with the NBA starting here on the 22nd. You know, I got my NBA season package up there at huntersportspicks.com. If you're looking to get that, I'm going to discount the price here today and tomorrow for an early bird special. Also, check out my free picks newsletter if you haven't already. 83 and 54 in the last 137 free picks. Send a couple of those every week, and we will keep doing that here through the end of the football season. I'll send some of those here through basketball as well. So you can sign up for free at huntersportspicks.com.
Well, speaking of basketball, what do you think? A little bit of college basketball next week on the show?
I was going to say, maybe a little bit of college basketball as we work it in here. I've been trying to do some cram sessions here for NBA, and then now it's college basketball time. So we'll work a little bit in.
All right, buddy. Sounds good, man. Once again, that's Kyle Hunter of huntersportspicks.com at Kyle Hunter Picks on Twitter. Kyle, appreciate your time as always, brother. Thank you so much for joining me, man. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right. Thanks, man. Take care.
There you go. There's Kyle Hunter again, professional handicapper over at huntersportspicks.com. Coming up on our Tuesday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll chat with Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline, NFL, NHL, a little bit of golf with him, then also Rolf Michaels of wagertalk.com. Some college basketball, some college football, and some NFL. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.